I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Curly W's in the books. Amed Rosario laces a liner through the hole into left field for his third pinch hit of the year, and the Nationals walk it off over the Braves. The Nationals on the field. Amed Rosario near second base.
Charlie Slows on the call last night. 106.7 The Fan. The Nats winning in a walk-off fashion, 8-7 over the Atlanta Braves. Amed Rosario pinch hitting in the 10th, scoring that run, scoring Bobby Barrels. Robert Hassel made his debut last night, and he was absolutely electric. All of a sudden, right? And this is kind of a crazy feeling right now. All of a sudden, this group is winners of, what, 5 out of their last 6? And it feels like a group that's kind of turning a corner. Now, it's tough because you look at the 3-game series against Baltimore and you go, well, how much can you really take away from a series against a super struggling Orioles team who partnered with their manager, Brandon Hyde, last week? So obviously things are interesting right now for the Washington Nationals. Our pal Grant Paulson, the host of the News Baseball Podcast, going to join us at about 10:40 to give us the skinny on the Washington Nationals as they are hot right now. Robert Hassel, absolutely amazing last night, though. I want to start with him. I saw a tweet yesterday from our guy Evan Johnson, voice of Evan, on the old Twitter app. And, you know, he's social media famous. See him all the time at Nats games, being loud and great. It's absolutely awesome. Yesterday, Evan tweeted Juan Soto, or tweeted the numbers of Robert Hassel and the other pieces of the Juan Soto deal, and said, Juan Soto for the Nats last night. So a good key from him. But no, more on Robert Hassel, who was an absolute godsend for this group last night, became the first player in Nationals history to record a multi-hit game and a stolen base in his major league debut. And if it wasn't for the center fielder for Atlanta, he would have had 3 hits last night. So he was a dog, and they need him, right? And the thing for me with Robert Hassel, I was kind of surprised that he wasn't on the initial roster coming out of spring training because of how well he hit it then. So happy to see him up and running now. I think he will be great for this team. It feels like if he could come into your lineup and give you some pop offensively, think about what you have right now on offense for a team last year and for parts of this year that just struggled. It couldn't hit the baseball. I believe last year they were last in the National League in home runs. Now think about your lineup if Robert Hassel is going to be hitting the ball this way. As we mentioned, a 2-for-5 debut. You got Robert Hassel cranking it well. K-Bear Ruiz batting .283 on the year, having a hell of a season. C.J. Abrams playing at an all-star level right now, looking like a legit superstar at shortstop. James Wood, we know the power and the natural swing that he has, set up to be one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball for the next 10, 15 years. All those guys are in your lineup. Nathaniel Lowe, who has been a ribby king this year, he's in your lineup. All of a sudden, offensively, you look pretty damn good if you're the Washington Nationals. Now, the key for this group, and last night they were brilliant. They've been brilliant in this series. They were really good against the O's. Your bullpen is now all of a sudden improving, right? I feel like as we sit here, and I mentioned going into these next two series, you got Atlanta, this weekend, and then you have Atlanta series wraps up today, if I'm not mistaken. And then you have a series, or wrapped up yesterday, and then you have a series going on with the San Francisco Giants. Two teams that are very close to you in this National League wild card standing. And as we continue to get later and later into the season here, you start taking a peek at the standings. I continue to ask it, where do the Nats have to be by July's trade deadline for them to be buyers? That's the thing that will consistently be the question in the back of my mind. Right now, though, for the Nationals, all vibes. All vibes. Feels like a group that is turning a corner, and it's super exciting to see them playing well. Grant Paulson going to join us bottom of the hour at about 10:40 to give us his thoughts. He was in attendance last night at Nationals Park. His thoughts on Robert Hassel and what that could mean for this lineup moving forward. A lot to get to. Loaded program for you all, as usual. Linnell Willingham sitting in for our guy, Kevin Sheedy. You can call us at 301-230-0980. Make sure you check out the YouTube stream as well, the Team 980's YouTube stream. Make sure you open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe, man, to get the latest from the Team 980. Being on stream, fun thing. I love it. I'm not making eye contact with the camera, so this is cool. But love being on stream, fun thing. There will be moments throughout this show that get clipped off, and I just want to tease the listening audience out there. I am not as diabolical and manic as I may come off on the stream at times. I'm just a normal guy that loves sports. Oh, hey, Max, how are you, brother?
Well, I don't know. Welcome. How are you?
You and our resident Cowboys fan, Brian, had to help us out with the stream here earlier this morning. Craig Hoffman's got all these gizmos and gadgets in here, and we didn't have everything absolutely potted down. So there was a little bit of an echo to start the show, and you, just like a pro's pro, coming in here, getting us together. No wild comments in the chat, so people must not have noticed.
No, I think we were good. We're flying under the radar today.
I think that's a good thing, is what they say in the world of sports sometimes.
Sometimes. On occasions like this, yeah, it's probably a positive.
Speaking of flying under the radar, one item locally that I think continues to fly under the radar is what the latest and next steps are when it comes to RFK 2.0. Mark Ein was on the Junkies yesterday and had some very interesting thoughts. It feels like, to me, where things currently stand, it's kind of a situation where, right, I think they need 7 votes for this to pass. Right now they've got 3 guaranteed, or 4 guaranteed in the bucket.
I thought they were closer than that.
No, that's why hearing all these councilmen come on the show, come on shows across our networks is so interesting. Councilman White was on with Grant and Danny 2 days ago. He currently right now is a no.
Ooh.
So this thing is all fluid, is how I would describe it.
For sure.
Every time we've had this conversation about the stadium, my overarching thought is that, yeah, it happens because there are too many folks of power that want it to happen. And when you have this amount of momentum in favor of something, traditionally it ultimately just gets done. And it's not something that people tap dance and mess around with.
I do think eventually it'll, I feel like it'll get done eventually.
Yes.
Because like the Chairman Mendelsohn has said as much. Like,
and Phil, we all know how big Phil rolls.
Well, yeah, but he also said, here, I actually want to play this for you, because mm-hmm. he said verbatim, we will reach a deal. It's just kind of a matter of working some things out and things like that. So here, just take a listen to this.
I do think that there will be some public subsidy. We will reach a deal. I do think the deal can be improved. My personal view that we should not use public tax dollars to subsidize a private entity, namely the stadium, is not the majority view. The prevailing view in the council is that we need to do our due diligence, scrutinize the proposal, and make sure it's the best deal possible for the district and for the taxpayers.
See, and I get where Phil Mendelsohn is coming from, right? It's politics involved with all of this, right? It's now more of a political issue than it is a sports and entertainment issue. Let's just get that out of the way first and foremost, right? Here is the thing with what Phil Mendelson just said. At what point, because you can fight and fight for the best deal possible, at what point do you put pen to paper and shut the hell up? Because that's really what it comes down to here. And I happen to agree with Phil Mendelson. A deal will get done, but not for the reason he thinks. This deal gets done because if it doesn't, it would be one of the biggest financial fumbles in the history of the district. Let's just put it, you know, let's be open, honest, and transparent about it, right? The type of deal that Josh Harris and the 21 limited partners of the Commanders are offering to the district is one that you simply cannot turn down, especially when you consider the landscape of stadiums across the United States. When you consider the landscape of stadiums across the United States and all the hubbub coming out of Nashville, Kansas City, Cleveland, all places that, you know, are up and ready for a new stadium, public funding is going to happen one way or another. The sweetheart part about this current deal that Josh Harris and the Commanders have on the table is they're asking for pennies, essentially, when it comes to the public funding piece of this. When you think about how much public funding is provided for all the other stadiums across the United States, D.C. is getting what I like to call a sweetheart deal. So at some point, you just got to take it. And I got the numbers back up here again for those of you that have forgotten. Right now, the public investment only expected to be about 24%, leaving the other 76% to be covered by the Washington Commanders. Now, this investment in this development will be the single largest private investment in the district's history. So with all of that being the backdrop to the stadium conversation, yes, Phil Mendelson, a deal will get done. And if it doesn't, the legacy of Mayor Bowser, those currently in office, not going to be very good. Not going to be very good. I want to let you all hear a little bit more on RFK 2.0. As I mentioned, Mark Iam was on with the Junkies yesterday and kind of reiterated what Phil Mendelson said. There ain't no plan B.
Let's just say it doesn't happen, and maybe it's a very small percentage chance that it doesn't happen. What's plan B?
Let's just stick to plan A.
Okay, all right.
So, I mean, look, I don't want to, like, people have said we really did have a lot of options here and a number of good options. This was the one that we were all, from the beginning, the most excited about, and we really do think it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. If for some reason didn't happen, there's obviously, you know, you always have backup and contingencies, but we're really focused on plan A.
Right answer, Mark Iam. Mark Iam gets it, right? Another guy that's from here, local ties, understands what, you know, the Commanders means to this tri-state region, to this metropolitan region. I continue to say it, and every time I talk about this, I pat myself on the back, because in this industry, sometimes you got to have some cojones to go out and, on a limb and say things that, you know, others aren't, you know, confident enough to say, I guess is the best way to put it. Max, you work with me ad nauseum over on 106.7 The Fan at night and on overtime. And whenever we have this conversation, Linnell comes off the top rope and says, well, I didn't really care where the stadium was going to be. If it was going to be in D.C., my one stipulation was that Josh Harris and his 21 limited partners footed a majority of the bill. They said, the hell with that, fat, stubby, former athlete. We're going to do you one better, and we're going to cover 76% of this thing, making it the single largest private investment in the history of D.C. So they're playing ball. Yep. The Commander's clearly ready to play ball. The district has got to tighten up here, because you don't want to run the risk of losing this thing. Because yeah, there ain't no plan B, like Mark Iam is talking about. They're for not sure renegotiating their deal.
And I feel like we're at the point where, like, you know how when Congress has a bill, right?
Yeah.
And they're trying to, it's quid pro quo, it's pork stuffing, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's if we put this through, I need you to do something for me. So I think we're kind of at that point where we're negotiating, like, all right, here's what we'll do for, I don't know, Ward 7. Here's what we'll do in Ward 8. And yeah, so I think we're just kind of ironing out the final details before we finally get kind of pushed all the way through.
I hope that is the case, because if DC is going to call Josh Harris and company's bluff, wouldn't be something I'd be fond of. Because guess who's always lurking in the background with a Commander's jersey right behind Josh Harris? Wes Moore. So I'm just saying, like, if you want to act as if, you know, you're going to try and get the best deal possible, because that's what this is, right? It is political posturing at this current juncture because they want the best deal possible. And I get it. But at some point, you got to keep the main thing the main thing. If this deal doesn't get done over a couple $100,000 or something nutty like that, then all parties involved are going to be caught with their pants down.
Because, like, at that point, it's a drop in the bucket that you're going to make back, that you're easily going to make back with, A, the NFL draft, B, a Super Bowl if you build this stadium, and like, all these mega events that are going to be coming to D.C. Taylor Swift wouldn't come to FedEx Field. Taylor Swift would come to a new stadium.
And this is the thing, right, about where we've been with this. This is Washington, D.C. First and foremost, it is an embarrassment to us as a metropolitan region that one of the top markets in the country, we're not talking about Wichita, Kansas, having a dome for a Super Bowl. We're talking about D.C., damn it. It's embarrassing that we're just now getting to the front of the line, so to speak, in terms of having the ability to host these mega events. As Max put it, Super Bowl, draft, WrestleMania, Taylor Swift, and Mr. Swift, who should retire because he looked like Mr. Swift in the Super Bowl. But like it to me, it's just, I don't know. It's got to get done one way or another. I'll leave it on this. If the D.C. council members want to play skinny and play hardball, the stadium will be in Maryland. Point blank. 301-230-0980, the number. A lot more to get to. We're going to get into Terry McLaurin coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Coming up at about noon, actually. Final hour of the show, we'll get into Terry McLaurin. As you all know, our pal Scary Terry due for a big-time payday, especially after the numbers he put up last year. The question is, does Terry deserve a blank check, or, you know, should you be kind of hesitant to give him that because of his age? We'll talk about that in great detail, top of the 12 o'clock hour. Our pal Trevor Sikkim, a Tampa Bay Tray, put out his top 10 wide receivers going into 2025. He'll join us at about 12:30 to touch on that. One quick thing that I wanted to get to before we hit our first break here. Last night, first of all, the NBA playoffs, the ratings may be down. I know there are tweets that come out every, you know, so often that say, this was the lowest viewed game two of the conference finals since when? I don't care about any of that. If you're a basketball fan and you appreciate good hoops, this NBA postseason, from the star power to the terrible misfortune with the injuries and just things being completely chaotic is how I would describe it. It's been one of the best NBA playoffs in recent memory. Dramatic finishes down the stretch. Guys turning a corner. And I always say this about the postseason in every sport. It's where legacies are made. Right? It's where guys are able to advance to that next level, so to speak. And last night, if you got to watch OKC in Minnesota game number two, America got introduced to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as the face of the NBA. And it is it's a polarizing conversation to have, I think, and we'll, you know, obviously expound upon it as the show rolls on here, but I think going into last night, the casual basketball fan, if you had to ask them, who's better, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Anthony Edwards, people would take the Ant-Man, right? Super outspoken, flair and highlight dunks, the flair for the dramatics, always active on social media, and he's an American, by the way. That's the other piece of this thing. He is an American star. I think the casual fan would have told you, yeah, Ant is better than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. If you have watched this season, last night in particular, and then this entire NBA postseason, it's not even a conversation. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, as we sit here on May the 23rd of 2025, is the face of the NBA and is the best player in the NBA, not named Nikola Jokic.
Okay, I was getting ready to jump in, and then you added the caveat, and I was Very proud of you.
Now, the reason why I feel like traditional basketball folks hate that, and it's not a race thing. It's not anything like that. It's just about what the game has been and how the growth internationally is real. Our best two players right now are not Americans.
Yep.
And you can make the argument based on the MVP finalist, our top three players in the world aren't American. Giannis, Joker, SGA. Who's going to step up? Anthony Edwards had the opportunity to do so last night, but Shea said, hold my beer. Watching him play, now I didn't get the chance to, I became a NBA lifer 2 seasons before the Wizards drafted John Wall. So think about me from an age standpoint, right? Early middle school days, still didn't know what the hell I was talking about, but believed that I did, as you could tell how I do radio. So I didn't get to watch Kobe Bryant a lot. But watching Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, that is what comes to mind. And I understand what people are going to say. What a lofty comparison. You bet your ass it is a lofty comparison. He's about it. Watching Shai Gilgeous-Alexander get to his spot last night and just rise up over the defender and knock down mid-range jumper after mid-range jumper after mid-range jumper, and then is still one of the elite setup guys in the NBA. He is special to watch. And this Thunder team, yeah, I know I don't tell you how to spend your money often. But if you can go get a little futures bet, maybe too late at this point. The odds may not even be worth it for you. If I have $500 to blow, I will go put $500 on the Thunder winning the finals right now. Right now. Because in reality, like, they're going to sweep Minnesota. If you've watched the first two games, the runs that that OKC have gone on here in the third, it's been absolutely nutty.
Minus 330.
So if you put $500 on that, what would it be?
You're winning $151.
It's not really worth it, right? Vegas understands what the hell is going on when it comes to the NBA and the finals, right? We get it. Now, here's the thing. There's no chance that the Pacers or Knicks winner beats OKC. I think America's best hope for Shai and the Thunder not winning the title, their best hope is that Anthony Edwards and the T-Wolves somehow figure it out. For two games, they haven't had all things click yet, right? In game one, the bench couldn't hit the wide side of a barn and Anthony Edwards was okay. Last night, the bench was great, or the bench was pretty good. Anthony Edwards went off, but Naz Reid was pretty much a no-show, got in foul trouble very early. Julius Randle, 2 for 11, 6 points, just 2 in the first half, his lowest ever in his postseason career. So Minnesota's got to get it figured out if they want to come back in this series. Right now, OKC with a 2-0 series lead as this year series shifts to Minnesota for game number 3. We got game number 3 of Knicks and Pacers coming up later tonight. We'll talk about that before we get out of here as well. A lot more to get to, as you mentioned. Grant Paulson going to join us about 10:40 to talk about the Washington Nationals and the way that they played last night, whether or not that group has turned a corner. So super excited for that conversation. When we get back, though, Linnell's third favorite league is at it again. Angel Reese, you know that I love her for more than one reason. Let's just say the history books, not loving her after last night. We'll give you more on the second face of the WNBA. Coming up next is the Team 980.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
We're off and running on the Team 980. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. You're tapped in the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham, sitting in for our guy, Kevin Sheehan. He is back with you, I believe, coming up on Monday. A lot more to get to in about 10 minutes or so, 15 minutes or so. Pal Grant Paulson going to join the program. He'll give us his thoughts. He was out at Nats Park last night for the debut of Robert Hassel. Nats played really well. They won on a walk-off. Ahmed Rosario with a single in the bottom of the 10th to score Robert Hassel. So just a really eventful night last night at the park. Nats winners of 5 in a row. The bullpen, playing a hell of a lot better. Has this group turned a corner? We'll chew on that with Grant Paulson coming up in about 15 minutes. Right now, though, something that I wanted to get to. It was dropped into our pre-show folder by our super producer, Mad Max. And I don't know if this was you, Max, trolling me, or is this you trying to come up with good conversation and have good dialogue?
It could be both.
Last night, it pains me to say this. I probably had to wash my mouth out with soap
after I
finished reading it.
I'm going to have to read you the game cast, if that's what you're not about to read.
No, I am. Angel Reese goes 0-for-7 from within 4 feet of the basket. The tie the most misses from that distance in the WNBA over the past 10 years. Can I defend her? What are we doing here?
By all means, man.
Can I defend her?
It's your show. It's your platform. Go right ahead.
You're lucky we're not on XM, because I'd have something to say about why she's missing so many layups. Wink, wink. But no, look. Angel Reese, what it doesn't say in that, what that game cast, as you referred to it as, Max, what it doesn't say in that game cast about Angel Reese last night, and Angel Reese over the first couple of games of the season here, still a rebounding savant. She had 8 offensive rebounds last night.
Okay, yeah.
Because she misses so many shots, I know what you're going to say. 5 turnovers as well, and she was 0-for-8. It was not a great night for her. Mind you, they played the best team right now in the W, the New York Liberty, who added our own Natasha Cloud and have really turned a corner since she's gotten on this group. They're a super team out there in New York.
They're coming off a title win. Yeah, they're
dominant. So for them to add Natasha Cloud was absolutely ridiculous. But that's here nor there. When you're going up against Jonquel Jones all night long, right, it's going to be a rough night for you if you're Angel Reese.
Yeah,
Jonquel Jones, pride of George Washington, one of the best bigs in all the W. Angel's got to be better. I think what's happening now with Angel Reese in this miss layup thing, I think it's mental. I really do. She works too hard, puts in too much work, is too focused, too locked in for this to be an actual thing and for her to just to continue to blow layups. I hope it's not something that continues. You know what I hate, though? You know what I hate, though, about the conversation and the discourse around her? People only want to focus on the bad with her. Why do y'all not acknowledge that she is already, at this early stage of her career, already the game's best rebounder? She's in year number 2. She's probably the best rebounder ever in the history of the WNBA, and all we focus on is the negative with Angel Reese. I get it, though. I get it. I continue to put it like this. If this rivalry is going to advance and escalate, if this league is going to grow and advance the way that I think it can, and that would be, you know, really spearheaded off of this Caitlin Clark Angel Reese rivalry, one, Angel has got to be better herself, and then two, when they play each other, talking about the Fever and the Sky, Indiana and Chicago, when they play each other, like, Chicago's got to be more competitive. Point blank. Chicago's off to an 0-2 start right now. It's hard when one of your faces of the league are playing on a bad team. And now she's playing bad. So it's kind of like adding insult to injury. It's still 2 games into the season. It's 2 games into her second season in the W. I am not going to overreact. I am not going to make memes and talk trash about Angel Reese like she's some unqualified geezer. She is a dog. A beautiful one at that. Last night wasn't her night. I don't know how much more you want me to say about this, because y'all not going to get me to come up here and badmouth Angel Reese. And I know some of you out there think I'm playing the long-term game for when she becomes a free agent and signs here in Washington.
Absolutely.
Maybe she could be my sugar mama.
She's going to move in the same building as Bilal.
Well, that
would be a short trip.
It would be a very short trip. Do you think, this is my bigger question with this, and I guess if you all want to chime in on the phones with this, you can as well, 301-230-0980, while we briefly touch on this. Does the WNBA, am I crazy for my thought that the WNBA has the star power and now the forward momentum to rival Major League Baseball and the NHL for the third most popular North American pro sport. How far are we away from that being a thing? I know they're not there right now. I'm not ignorant. But here's the thing. And when you look at it like this, it's almost jaw-dropping. Technically, Max, listening audience, technically the WNBA is already more popular than the NBA. When you think about where this league started, how young the league is, the popularity it already has after being one of the newer pro North American sports leagues, they're doing a damn thing. That's the way that I would look at it.
They're doing all right.
They're doing great.
They're doing pretty damn well. And I think it also has to do with the fact that it's May. It's late May. What else is happening?
Yeah.
Credit, but
Stanley Cup playoffs have been interesting, but
yes, that's
but no
true.
One cares about hockey, Chris Russell.
Well, I do. And the Florida Panthers have waxed the Carolina Hurricanes for two games in a row.
It's been wild.
It's been very, very nice to see. But back to the W.
Yes.
That Indiana Fever Chicago Sky game between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, that averaged 2.7 million viewers.
Yes.
That, the average NHL game for regular season gets like anywhere between 500 and 750K. And I think the NBA is between 750K and a million.
Okay.
Something like that. And I think baseball's down there with the NHL around 500 to 750 as well. So if the W keeps doing this, yeah, I could see it.
So a lot was made over the foul that happened in that game over the weekend.
There was a lot made of that foul, especially between people at ESPN.
Scripted. It was the A-block topic on Get Up and First Take. So, Kathy Engelhart, take a bow, my good sis. Have your league at the tip of everybody's tongue. Now, what Max mentioned, right? It's the end of May. Not a whole lot going on right now. But this is why you have the lane to do this. Your season starts now, doesn't end till around October. So you're going to have this runway.
You got the summer.
You got the summer to do your thing. I hope they don't go on that crazy break that they did last year because I think that's terrible for their sport.
Wasn't that Olympic related?
It was Olympic related, I believe. So I don't think the regular season, I think, wraps up in like August or something like that. So we'll see. Bottom line is this. I do think Angel Reese right now is going through a little bit of a mental block when it comes to her and finishing. This is getting into an awkward conversation. Let's go to Scorched Earth. Mike is in Bowie. Wants to chime in. What's going on, Mike? You got to pop Mike up, I think.
My man, how you doing?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
Yeah, I was on your show like a week ago, and okay. I was giving my input on how disgusted I was about NBA players' contracts and the number six pick we got. And you were like, you went Scorched Earth, so when I call back in. And I was talking to Rooster yesterday, and he was like, I want you to call in during Cowboy games on every Monday from like 4 to 4:05, but I want y'all to remember me. So that's why I said Scorched Earth. Because when I call in, if I have something to say, I'm going to say it, and it's going to be like intense.
Bring it, brother. So we welcome it.
Here's what I got to say. And it's some, I don't even know what you're talking about. I just heard Angel Reese, and there's been something in the back of my brain for the past couple of weeks I've been thinking about that's really been making me angry a little bit.
What's up?
And here's what it is. And I'll just throw it out there. If you turn on Fox, and look, I'm to the right just in life in general, but if you turn on like Fox News and you're watching like, I don't know, Republican style news, it's like there's always these stories about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, and they seem like they're slanted against Angel Reese, okay? And you turn on CNN and you're going to see some pro Angel Reese comment, I mean, pro Caitlin. Caitlin comment and anti Angel Reese, and I think it's so stupid. I'm so mad at it. I don't even want to see. I don't want them commenting on WNBA personal stuff. You know, I don't want them even talking about it. It feels like they're being decisive. And look, I coach my kids like in basketball growing up.
Shout out to you. I love that for you.
Look, and there was a better coach than me that was on the team, and he was like, I want them to watch women's basketball because it's so fundamental.
Yes.
It's so like you're going to learn these fundamentals. We're not playing above the rim, so we want you to watch these games. And I remember I just fell in love with it, and I was like, if y'all love, and you know, the younger kids are knocking it, they're saying this and that about it, and I was like, if you love basketball, like you really love it with your heart, you're going to appreciate an old lady playing, a young girl playing, anyone playing and dribbling a ball, you're going to have appreciation for that. And I feel like I truly love basketball. So I don't care if it's a guy or girl, black, white, anybody. I don't want people comment on. And, you know, to be honest, when I heard Ryan Clark's comments about RG3, I agreed with Ryan Clark.
Wow.
I was like, if you're married.
Okay.
I'm sorry. And then the whole world came down on him, you know. And I remember, like, I grew up in DMV, PG County. I've been around a lot of people of color. I don't know. I felt like, I didn't like what RG3 had to say. And I felt like, you know, he had a point. If don't comment on it if you're not, you know, a black woman. I don't know. It's just the way I felt.
It's interesting. I hear what you're saying, as always, Mike. We appreciate you chiming in, man. Wow, I was loaded. Real quick, because we got to get to Grant Paulson here. I think my frustration with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, how it's been covered, it has turned into a black-white issue, and I don't think it's that at all. My guy, Zach Gill, my co-worker on the Infinity Sports Network, had a take on Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark that I initially agreed with, that I realized, Zach, what are you talking about? He compared Angel Reese to Draymond Green and then Steph Curry to Caitlin Clark. It was such a disservice and discredit to Angel Reese because Draymond Green is a clotheslining, dirty, cheating bastard. Like, there's nothing in Angel Reese's game that is comparable to Draymond Green. The only thing they have in common is that they're both outspoken and passionate about the game that they play and the game that they love. Other than that, I don't really see it. Bottom line is this. I do think the WNBA is continuing to grow. This week has been huge for them. Get well soon, Angel Reese, is the best thing that I will say after a historically bad showing last night. 301-230-0980. You know who had a historically good showing in his Nats debut? Robert Hassel. Grant Paulson joins us next, the co-host of the Bustin' Loose Baseball podcast. He's also the host of Grant Danny weekdays 2 to 6:30 on The Fan. He joins us next to give us his thoughts on Bobby Barrels lighting up Nats Park last night, going 2 for 5 in his major league debut. Grant Paulson joins us next.
All right, last night, big win for the Nats. They extend their winning streak to 5 games. Ahmed Rosario walked it off in the bottom of the 10th. For the Nats, they win 8-7. Robert Hassel became the first Nat to notch 2 hits and 1 stolen base in his debut. The Panthers, they waxed the Hurricanes 5-0 in the Eastern Conference Final. They take a 1-0 lead, or 2-0 lead, excuse me, and the Thunder beat the Timberwolves 118-103 to jump out to another 2-0 lead in the series. 2025 MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander notched 38-3-8. Caitlin Clark's 140-game streak of scoring at least 1 3-pointer has come to an end. The Fever still able to pull out the win over the Atlanta Dream, 81-76. The Colorado Rockies are off to the worst start, the worst 50-game start in MLB history after they're swept by the Philadelphia Phillies. They sit at 8-42. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Moving and grooving right along here on the Team 980. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. Tapped into the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham, sitting in for our guy Kevin Sheehan. He is back with you on Monday. We'll take you up to 1 p.m. Remember, make sure you keep it locked. Coming up, top of the 12 o'clock hour, we'll get into Terry McLaurin and a potential contract extension with the Washington Commanders. Trevor Sikkema, Pro Football Focus, put out his top 10 wide receivers heading into next year. He will join us at about 12:30 to, you know, reveal where he put Terry and what type of deal he thinks the Pro Bowl wide receiver is in line for, as he is set to be an unrestricted free agent coming up next year. Right now, we go out to the guest hotline for the first time this show. We find our pal Grant Paulson, the host of Grant and Danny, weekdays 2 to 6:30 over on 106.7 The Fan. Also the co-host of the Bustin' Loose Baseball podcast with our pal Toby Altizer. You can download that wherever you get your podcast. Good morning, my brother. How are you?
Linnell, what's good, buddy? How are you?
I am good. Doing a lot better after the way the Nats have been playing. Bobby Barrels last night. Robert Hassel, as you tweeted, became the first player in Nats history to record a multi-hit game and a stolen base during his major league debut. What were the vibes like last night at the park? And for you, someone who follows this thing super close, were you at all surprised by Robert Hassel being prepared for a big-time moment?
I wasn't surprised by the performance because it's a long time coming. He's waited 5 years for this. He was drafted out of high school at 18, Linnell, by the Padres, eighth overall. At that time, he was actually viewed as kind of a can't-miss, top-of-the-board talent, obviously, to go that high. But he was one of the better prospects in the game at one point in time because he's a complete player. You know, all the five tools are part of the tool belt for him. He can run. He can field. He's got some power, although I'd say at this point it's probably, you know, fringe average. He's more hit for tool with doubles ability going gap to gap. And he's the guy who's going to steal some bases for you. So I think he can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of years, he has dealt with a bunch of injuries. And because of that, his production has waned in the minor leagues. And, you know, frankly, I think he's not the prospect he once was because as he's played more and more, I think, you know, there are areas where you'd say, okay, there's nothing plus. There's not like this great carrying tool where he's got a 70 grade ability on a 2080 scouting scale. Like he's not going to do anything at a really, really high level. He's just a very solid player. But to come up as experienced as he was in the high minors, double and triple A, he played more games at those two levels than most of the guys the Nats call up that are high-end prospects. And he had a great first game. As you mentioned, he had two hits. He actually got robbed in the ninth inning. Should have had a third hit. Michael Harris made a diving catch. His first hit came on the first pitch he ever saw on the show, which was awesome. He laced it right into right field, kind of stayed within himself, and it was just a really good approach. And then he immediately stole second and fueled a multi-run rally, a four-run inning. So really impressive game. He scored the game-winning run, by the way, coming around in the 10th inning as the courtesy runner at second and extras. So it's just a memorable night for him and his family, and it was good vibes to answer your question at the park, man. That's five straight wins for the Nats, six of their last seven. They needed this after a rough patch. They lost seven at one point last week without a win. So they're kind of erasing that with their winning streak right now.
Yes, they are. And, you know, you mentioned they're winners of five in a row. The big issue with this group to start the season has been the bullpen. They've actually turned a corner during this mini run as well. During their first 39 games, the bullpen's ERA 7.29. Their last 10 entering last night was 3.12. Do you think this team is turning a corner, Grant, or is it a byproduct of, you know, back-to-back series against, you know, the Orioles and a kind of a struggling Atlanta team?
No, I think they're playing a lot better because of what you just said. I mean, the bullpen has gone from being historically awful, one of the worst we've ever seen statistically to that point in the season. I mean, that's not hyperbole. It was that bad. To pitching like a big league bullpen. And it's not just random. I mean, they've made a lot of changes. They got rid of two of the guys that were among their worst relievers early in the year. Lefty Colin Poche, righty Lucas Sims, who are no longer with the organization. And they have brought up some young arms that they've given a chance from their system in Jackson Rutledge, a former first-round pick, who was a starter they converted to the bullpen, and Cole Henry, a former second-round pick out of LSU, who was a starter they converted to the bullpen after a ton of injuries. And both of those guys have pitched very effectively. In fact, Cole Henry last night, Linnell, had a scoreless inning. He's pitched 15 times, and 14 of them he is not allowed a run. And both of those guys initially just got a lot of low leverage, insignificant innings, but they have now started to get more and more opportunities in higher leverage, which is very smart, and I think it has helped them a lot. And then, you know, they've been able to get the ball generally to their closer, Kyle Finnegan, who is a big league, legitimate, credible reliever, and he's had a very, very strong start to the year as a closer. So now you're talking about having kind of three guys you trust in their roles. They've added to their bullpen by getting their rotation a little healthier. Michael Soroka, who got hurt in his first start of the year and missed several weeks, is back in the rotation, which means Brad Lord, who was filling in out of the bullpen and into the rotation, is now back in the pen to give them some length, even though he scuffled a little bit. So when you add all that together, you know, then you could just get guys that have, you know, started slow that are improving, like Jorge Lopez, or, you know, Jose Ferrer goes from being maybe a setup man to the middle innings and a little bit of less of a, you know, high wire act for him. It's worked out. So they're pitching a lot better. And when that happens with this lineup, they're going to win a lot more baseball games. I mean, they've got a, I'd say, a serviceable rotation, and they've got a average-ish lineup. I've been joking all year that they're a 500 team with like a 60-win bullpen,
yeah.
Right? So you add those two things together, and you're not near 500. But lately, they've been a 500 team with a 500 bullpen, and that's how you start to string some wins together.
With the record in mind here, and obviously it's just May the 23rd, so very, very early on here still, after last night's win, five games back of the final wild card spot in the National League, with things starting to come together for this bullpen, Grant, when you got James Wood hitting the ball the way that he is, C.J. Abrams off to a crazy start, Bobby Barrels now being called up, K-Bear, who we'll get to in a second, had a really special moment last night. He's hitting it well. Nathaniel, all I do is hit RBIs low, hitting it well. Do you see them being in this wild card race for the majority of the season, and what would they have to do by July's trade deadline for Rizzo and company to make a move as a buyer?
So I don't think that's realistic, you know, raining on a parade here. I just don't think they're that caliber. But, look, they've got a chance to change the opinion on that, and they get to decide that with how they play. I think they're short in the bullpen, as we just talked about. They're running hot right now, but, you know, there's going to be cold stretches as well. I think, you know, big picture, the frustration is they're a couple players away.
Yeah.
And they've been that for the majority of the last couple of years, and they certainly, this offseason, I think most people in the fan base knew they probably need one more slugger who can drive in runs and hit home runs, and they didn't do that. And they either needed a starter or a couple of relievers or both. And that doesn't, you know, the relievers part doesn't cost you nearly as much money, but they just don't spend it anymore, really, or haven't in many years. Maybe they will again at some point. And so that's the annoyance for me, and the frustration for me is it's going really, the plan's going well. The baseball operation controls, the rebuild and the trades, and let's make sure you get good players for Soto. Enter Wood, Abrams, Gore, Hassel. You know, let's make sure that James Wood becomes what he's supposed to. He's 22 and on pace for 40 homers and 110 RBI. He's going to be an all-star this year, maybe. Let's make sure C.J. Abrams repeats last year as an all-star. He's going to be an all-star for the second time at 24 years old, possibly. Let's make sure Gore takes another step. Every year he gets better. He's leading the major leagues in strikeouts on the mound right now. Like, there's some really good things happening. You mentioned K-Bert Ruiz, who's made a huge leap this year and is really helping them out offensively as the catcher with the most hits and the highest batting average.
Which is crazy.
Who plays every day.
Based off how last year went.
What's that?
I said the K-Bears turnaround, I think, is one of the more, you know, really special storylines of the season based off of what he went through last year.
100% agree with you. All that's working out, and it's part of the plan, but it's like, where are my reinforcements?
Yeah.
The way I – it's a bad analogy, but, like, you know, in a movie or something, when you draw up a battle plan, you're like, all right, you guys go in first, and you hold your own, and I want you to fight and scratch and claw and, you know, bite kneecaps. And then right when you need us, we're coming over that hill. And it's like they did that, and they're looking back, but nobody's coming over the hill. They didn't sign anybody. You know, they didn't go get the 30-homer, 100 RBI right fielder. They didn't go sign the starting – their starting pitcher is an oft-injured guy who's already been injured for the majority of the season. You know, the relievers were $2 and $3 million bargain bin grabs who have been cut mostly. So it's like – you know, when you play cheap games, you know, these are the results sometimes. So that's kind of my frustration. I will say, though, you asked how could they do it. It's what you're seeing. If their bullpen with these young arms can pitch at a really high level, and C.J. Abrams, James Wood, and when Cruz comes back, who had homered in his last two games before he got hurt, or maybe it's Hassel, like their young guys play at a really high level, then they're going to hang around. And then maybe Mike Rizzo goes, you know what, shoot, we're four games back, we're three games back. Why don't we go at a piece? We've got players that are expendable in the system. I just think it's a year early, and I probably wouldn't be in that business if I'm Rizzo. But it is possible. They just got to maintain what they've done over the last week, which I think is going to be difficult.
Nats winners of five in a row. They begin a weekend series against the San Francisco Giants starting tonight. You can hear that over on The Fan as well. As hearing our pal Grant Paulson, 2 to 6:30 with Danny Ruye. Grant, we appreciate you giving us some time, brother.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Good talking to you.
Yes, indeed. That is Grant Paulson. Make sure you check out the Bustin' Loose Baseball podcast with him and Toby Altizer wherever you get your podcast. First hour in the books here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Lynnell Willingham sitting in for a guy, Kevin. He's back with you on Monday. Top of the 11 o'clock hour. We will switch gears to the National Football League. Aaron Schatz of ESPN put out his list of the most underrated players at every position in the National Football League. Were there any Commanders on this list? We'll touch on that next right here on the Team 980.